listening to the Unspooled Real podcast on gotchamovies.com. I'm Ryan Oliver.
And I'm Jenny Knoll.
How's your evening going?
It could be better. I had to see Ant-Man, and although it wasn't as bad as I expected, it still was boring.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Because, I mean, the overall consensus right now is, like, kind of mixed, but overall positive. But then again, that's kind of been the consensus of every Marvel Universe movie, and we have not liked everyone that has come out equally. So, but that is disappointing.
Yeah, maybe it's me, because I was just down on this movie from the start. But I did give, there are some positive points to it. This isn't an Ant-Man podcast or a Marvel podcast, thank God, so I don't have to go into them.
No, we don't have to talk about it. And fortunately, Trainwreck comes out this week, too. So there's other options out there to go see. But yeah, it's been a while since we've done one of these podcasts. I think we've probably teased like two episodes that never actually happened.
Yeah, the Maggie and the Slow West episode that just didn't ever work out.
Yeah, the movies we were going to review that were on VOD that are now actually on Blu-ray for people to buy. I'm sure Maggie will be available on Netflix streaming like sometime in the near future, since it's a Lionsgate Roadside Attractions release. And then I think we teased Tomorrowland too, which we never ended up talking about, which is kind of okay because that movie was like, you know, ambitious and like I appreciate it, but it's also like overall kind of a weak movie, I would say.
Yeah, a weak movie. I would agree with you there, but I kind of liked it. I had a good time. I had a better time at Tomorrowland than I did at Ant-Man.
Fair enough. I don't know because I haven't seen Ant-Man, but I liked, like, I was with Tomorrowland until the last kind of third of the movie, when it became a soapbox for its ideas and became more of a lesson and less of a movie, and then I kind of tuned out at that point.
Yeah, I mean, it's whatever. I enjoyed it. I had a great time. I didn't care about it being on its soapbox. I kind of liked its soapbox anyway. So I was like, yeah, okay. I like this positive movie.
Right. Well, what's interesting, right. But what's interesting is, like, despite agreeing with almost everything that was brought up, like, idealistically in that movie, I still didn't like it. I'm like, I like what you're telling me. I just don't like it in the way you're conveying it.
Yeah, it could have been better. But yeah. I don't know. George Clooney, man, he just gets me every time.
Touche. Fair enough. So I guess before we dive into what we're going to be discussing this week, is there anything besides Ant-Man that you've been watching?
Oh my God, I've seen so many movies this past week. I think my head's about to burst.
Oh, really? Like what?
Well, last night I went and saw Tremors in theaters for the first time ever, which was really, really fun. Have you seen Tremors?
I have actually never seen it.
Oh man, I thought I was the only one. Now I know. Yeah, I saw that for the first time and it was really fun. Super bad movie that's done in this perfect way. I love bad movies, so... And I saw everything that came out this weekend. I saw Minions. I saw Infinitely Polar Bear. I saw Amy. I've seen so many movies. I saw this movie called Saving Face, which is this Asian American lesbian dramedy that I really, really enjoyed. It reminded me a lot of The Wedding Banquet. I don't know if you're familiar with that movie in Ang Lee's filmography, but... Saving Face was really, really good, surprisingly. And I had never heard of it until I had to introduce it the film festival I work for. So.
Well, it sounds interesting. And no, I'm actually not familiar with that Ang Lee title, but I'll have to seek it out. Is it one worth seeking out in his filmography?
Wedding Banquet? Yeah, I think it's one of his best ones.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I have not seen near as many movies as you have this week. Holy cow. I did finally get to see The Tribe, which is definitely kind of torn with our writers at Gotcha Movies, because our published review gave it a 1 out of 5 star, but it made our overall site's top 10 films of the year so far. And I'd have to agree with the latter, I would say. And I haven't seen a lot in 2015, but it's one of the best films I've certainly seen so far this year. It's like everything you've heard about it. It's incredibly difficult. And yeah, it's in sign language. There's no subtitles. There's a lot of incredibly long takes in the movie. And so it's a But for the 2 hours and 10 minutes, it's been so long since I've sat in a theater and, like, my eyes didn't glaze over in stupidity, like with a lot of the summer blockbusters that have come out. Like, I was actually locked in to the experience and could not take my eyes off it. And I actually want to see it again so I can figure out more what is going on. But I think it's interesting that you have to kind of figure out what is going on, you know, based on the scene. You have to study the actual scene because you don't have the dialogue to tell you what is going on.
And that didn't never bore you, just having to sit there and try to figure it out, or annoy you?
Not for a second. I was so sucked into the experience that I was never bored. I was definitely, like, shocked and upset at times, but I was never bored with it. I was never annoyed. I was just drawn into the power of the film itself.
I'm sold.
You should see it. I really think you should check it out. Yeah, I like I said, it's one of the best films of the year. It's a Ukrainian film. I'm not going to try to pronounce the filmmaker's name, but it is his first film. And I think that's impressive. I just think it's a really impressive film to think of it that way. And it just reinforces the idea of film as an art form, as something that you can push the medium and do something that has never been done before. And I thought that was incredibly impressive. And yeah, I was, again, never bored for a second. I was completely into it. Though, depressing enough, It's playing at the Northwest Film Forum in Seattle, and I thought, because it's only playing for a week, because Drafthouse Films will do that, they'll either play it for like a weekend or a week at a time in a city, and I pre-ordered my tickets thinking, oh, well, it might sell out, so I gotta get my tickets and make sure I get my seat. There were like 12 people in the theater on a Friday night.
No.
Yeah, it was upsetting, but it was still an interesting experience, and like those people who were there wanted to be there. And so that was interesting watching it with an audience, a small one, but an audience nonetheless.
Well, I'm sure that the Draft House in Austin will have packed screenings and they're probably all sold out because it's a Draft House film in Austin.
Oh, even the most like, you know, movie that's not doing well financially in the box office will sell out at the Draft House. I mean, the only, you know, like, in the moment release movie that I have seen at the Draft House was Inherent Vice, and it was sold out both times I went, and that movie did not do well in the box office. So that's, I believe you. I believe you that it's going to do incredibly well. And the, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I saw Dope on a Friday afternoon, which everyone should be usually working. And, it was like sold out.
Oh, wow. That's encouraging. Yeah. I still need to see that movie, but, I'm going to this week. What else have I watched? Not really much. For our next Over Under episode, if for the listeners of this podcast who listen to that podcast, one of the movies we'll be discussing is Gremlins 2, which I finally watched. I've seen the first one, and I love the first one, but I've never seen the second one. That movie might as well just be called Fuck It, the movie, because everything that happens in it is just so insane and so over
like
the top.
Like the New York scene? I love it.
Yes, like that. like Rambo Gizmo shooting a arrow. Like it, just everything. Joe Dante was just like, I'm going to put everything that I could possibly think of in this movie. And it was something special, I have to say.
I remember we actually I use study in the light sense of the word, but we were shown that clip in a film class for the gender and sexuality in the horror film class. I just remember falling in love with it because I hadn't seen Gremlins 2 since I saw it on TV in probably like middle school. And then I watch it all the time now. Like if I'm in a down mood, I'm like, Gremlins, New York, New York.
Yeah.
I watch it and I'm like, ah, yes, I feel good now.
Yeah. That scene's very fun. So I very much enjoyed that movie. And then I guess I've started some stuff, but haven't been able to finish it. Just for things that have gotten away. I've started The Duke of Burgundy. I'm about 30 minutes into it, and I'm going to finish it. I like what I've seen so far. I haven't seen enough to really, like, you know, assess it, but I do like it so far. And, yeah, I guess that's all I've been watching.
Yeah, you also started Slow West, and you didn't finish it because your rental went out.
Yes, that did happen as well, which now I think it's at Redbox. So
what?
Yeah,
I'm going.
Yeah, it's out on Blu-ray right now. So I'm definitely going to, you know, finally check that movie out. I'll finally see Dope, getting to see some movies. But yeah, I guess shall we move on to our discussion this week?
Yes, I'm really excited because I made so much time for these two movies this week. Like, you don't even know.
No, and I'm very glad that you did. So,
especially since you heard the list of movies I just said I watched outside these two movies.
Right. So, I guess, so this week we're going to be talking about the Terminator franchise as a whole. We'll conclude with a brief review of Terminator Genesis because I have seen it and Jenny has not.
Yeah.
But this is, I kind of teased this out the last episode because I believe I said something to the effect of, we're going to cover Terminator Genesis just so you would finally watch Terminator 1 and 2. And despite all these episodes we teased that did not happen, we're making good on this promise because you did watch Terminator 1 and 2.
I did for the first time ever. It's like I'm rejuvenating my 80s classics I missed in my childhood.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it kind of makes sense since they're starting to come back in a big way this summer between Mad Max Fury Road, Jurassic World, and now Terminator Genesis. So we have these kind of resurgence of properties that were big in the 80s and early 90s that are starting to come out again. So, I mean, you finally watched The Road Warrior in, you know, talks of Mad Max Fury Road. So now you're caught up with Terminator 1 and 2. So I guess we could start, the best place to start would be with the first Terminator, with the 1984 film, which is basically a horror film. We kind of talked off mic about that. I think most people, when they think Terminator, they think T2, like they think Hasta La Vista, Baby, like they think that type of stuff. But it was, you know, it was the first one that really, I'm losing my train of thought, but the first one was just more of a kind of a straight up sci-fi horror film. So on your first viewing, first time you've ever seen it, what did you think of the first Terminator?
Oh my God, I loved it. Like, I was really shocked by how much I liked it because I started it and I was like, it's going to be overrated. Probably I'm not going to like it. And I feel like it was really going to hurt your feelings and everyone else's feelings in the world, because that's usually what I do when I watch these old movies. I'm like, but like with Blade Runner, but I really loved it. Like, I actually was texting at the beginning of it, and then I set my phone aside and put it like face down so I couldn't see people texting me back, so I could actually watch the movie, which means I'm hella interested in it if I'm doing that, especially if I'm in my bed and watching a movie. I didn't expect it to be that way. I didn't expect it to be so linear. I didn't expect it to, because it's a time travel movie, but it doesn't really get boggled down in its time traveliness. So there's no timey, wimey, wibbly, wobbly stuff going on. And I was kind of surprised by the horror themes. Like, it did feel like a lot more like a horror movie to me, which I love horror movies. So then that was also a huge plus. Some of the CGI was obviously dated. A lot of the stop motion stuff I didn't really think still worked modernly, but because the movie is so kinetic, I forgave it almost for not having great CGI in this modern age.
Yeah, it's a movie that like is again thrilling, like super thrilling to the point where like you're invested in it. And I do think, I'll say right off the bat, I think this is James Cameron's best movie for me. Obviously, if you asked me as a kid which one I thought was best, I would have said Terminator 2, and we'll get into that. But I think this is James Cameron's best movie because it's so lean and so efficient, and so it's his best written movie, I think, because James Cameron, despite being the sort of like the action director, like one of the best of all time, he's never been known for his writing strengths. Like, his dialogue has always been really kind of like hammy and on the nose. And it's not that it isn't in this movie, but it's conveyed in such a way that it's not obvious. Like, for example, like this movie, like it starts, I think the beginning is really, really solid, especially because it's like the movie is much more existential than any of the other Terminator movies, and more so than people think, because you don't really know, you don't have a key into this future that happens. Like, you just kind of get a text that says what's going on, and then you have Kyle Reese, played by Michael Biehn, who has like flashbacks to this war that has happened, and as an audience member at this point you're like, what exactly is going on in this movie? But you're with it because there's such a dire tone and a dire atmosphere to it that it's haunting and it's gripping. And I think I mentioned this in my Throwback Thursday review. Like, there's a scene when Kyle Reese saves Sarah Connor for the first time, and they're getting chased in the car by the Terminator, by Arnold Schwarzenegger. And then Kyle Reese is like giving her all the exposition of why he was sent back in time, why he needs to protect her, what's going on. And it's like, it's totally on the nose, but it's like, you're in a car chase with a death machine. Like, of course you're going to be concise and accurate. You're not going to like work around the issue. So it's like, he was able to convey his on the nose dialogue in a way that wasn't annoying. And I think that's incredible.
I think way that I thought about that when that scene was on, I was like, okay, he's giving me a lot of exposition, but at the same time, this scene is so interesting that I almost forgive them for giving me all this, like, oh, blah, blah, blah. This is what's going on right now, Sarah Connor. This is why I'm saving you right now, Sarah Connor. And because it's so interesting to see what's going on screen, it works the exposition in a good way. I read your Throwback Thursday review, and I disagree with you on the fact that you said that Sarah Connor is really passive, because I feel like, I mean, obviously at first she's a little bit more passive, but then once she realizes what's going on, she's super aggressive and she works to her goals and she thinks more than I think that you give her credit for in your Throwback Thursday.
No, I certainly agree. Maybe I spoke too soon. I'm thinking in terms of like, I'm probably thinking more in terms of how we're introduced to the character, because when she's introduced in T2, she's doing pull-ups in a mental asylum. So I guess you have that, like, that imagery is always stuck in my head. And I always forget that she takes that sharp turn in Terminator in the first one, especially towards the end of the movie. So you're right. You're right to call me out on that. But, yeah, I just think of T2 where she's introduced already as the sort of like badass warrior.
That's fair enough. I have my problems with her being in a mental asylum and like immediately the badass warrior kind of changeover from Terminator 2, but we haven't gotten to that yet. Because actually, I'm going to go with my one complaint that I have in Terminator, and it's that Kyle Reese is such a stalker.
See, I didn't see that. You mentioned something like that to me, but he is kind of an awkward person, and he's somebody who, I mean, they don't like explicitly say necessarily, but he's somebody who doesn't know this era. I mean, he's somebody who's clearly from the future and he's younger. And they've showed this in other iterations, that he's clearly much younger and was kind of born into this war essentially. And so I feel like he just doesn't have the sort of like skills or social skills to act as a normal human being.
Maybe. I don't know. It's so star-crossed lover-y in the sense that he's like, oh, I saw a picture of you and I fell in love with you and I knew I had to come find you all because I saw a single picture of your face. Like, I don't know. It felt so creepy to me. And then she ends up sleeping with him and after like hanging out with him in a storm drain all night in this like icky motel room. And I'm like, Sarah, that might not be the best idea, but you know, whatever. He means well. He's kind of creepy stalkery. And if he wasn't a creepy stalker, he wouldn't have been able to find her so well.
True. But at the same time, you also have to make the argument that when he came back in time, they don't explicitly say this in the movie, though they do try to explain it in other movies. And I don't know. I think the first two are canon and the rest I could care less about. But he probably knows that he's John Connor's father. When he goes back, like he knows that is something that he has to do to keep that cycle going. I firmly believe that he knows that. And so he's trying to, while he does sound creepy stalkery, that's like his, I guess, attempt to make sure that the consummation happens.
And I think at one point she kind of figures it out too. And that's, I think, almost why she sleeps with him, is because she realizes, oh, I think I need to have a son. How am I going to have a son? Oh, hey, you're here. It seems right. You were sent back in time. You have this picture of me that was given to you by my son. I think it clicked in her head a little bit more before it clicked in his. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, again, the argument could be made that he knew. He knew that that was something that just had to happen, that was inevitable. But okay, I can say that that's fair. But yeah, back to this idea of it as a horror movie, because like I said, most people think of it as an action movie, but it's like, you have this unstoppable monster who's just, who's killing people with no regard, no regard for anybody's life. I mean, he looks down the phone book and just finds every Sarah Connor and just goes and is like, and hopes it's the right one. That one poor woman gets it when he opens the door and just kills her, the guy at the gun shop. And it's pretty terrifying. And James Cameron even said he wanted to make a movie sort of akin, like he was very influenced by Halloween to make this movie. And that, I think that shows with the unstoppable killer, the sort of like the mood and the synth score, especially. I love the score to this movie, more so than I do any of the other movies. And, yeah, that's, do you have anything to add to that?
Oh, no, I actually agree with you. And what makes more sense now that you said that he kind of was influenced by Halloween, I didn't see it when I first watched this movie because obviously I hadn't seen Terminator, but you always likened the guest to Terminator, and I always likened it to Halloween. And so then watching Terminator, I was like, oh, the guest is this perfect mashup of Halloween and Terminator.
Which, thank you. I totally forgot. I'm glad you brought it up because I was going to ask you if you saw the connection now that you've seen this movie, because, you know, he is, you know, like David and the guest is an unstoppable killer, and he can't stop. Like he's triggered, he's programmed. Whereas like same with the Terminator, he is programmed to kill the specific person and will not stop until he does. All the way down to the thumbs up even that David gives at the end of the guest, which perfectly ties into Terminator 2. So, yeah, I think that was like, again, the perfect mashup of those two movies.
Yeah. And so watching this, and I think that's probably why I like Terminator 1 more than I like Terminator 2, is because I love horror movies and I love this, like, just the simplicity of horror movies. And I feel like Terminator just nailed that simplicity and made it just so interesting to me. And the ending scene where you can't kill the guy at the end, the Terminator, it's like impossible. She keeps trying. She blows him up. It's not working. And Kyle Reese dies. Everything seems like at its bottom low. And then she nails him. I thought that was great.
Oh yeah. Especially the line that goes along with it too.
Oh, what is it? I was going to,
it's like, you're terminated, fucker.
And yeah. And I was down. Like, that's perfect. Why isn't that line always like spouted off when people quote the movies?
Cause two was the big hit. And I think that's, again, it's like when people think of the road, like Mad Max, they automatically go to the Road Warrior. When people think Terminator, they automatically go to Terminator 2. Like, I think that's the one that's ingrained in popular culture. But, yeah, I still stand by the fact that I do think Terminator 1 is the best one. I love how efficient it is. And I love that you talked about how uncomplicated the time travel is, because in subsequent movies, like especially after 2, it gets really convoluted and complicated because they try to explain it. And it's like, if your filmmaking is just strong enough and your story's strong enough, people are going to go with it. But if you try to explain it and it doesn't make sense, they're going to think you're full of shit. So, and I think that's what happens in Salvation and in Genesis, which, I mean, we'll touch on them later, but I think that's honestly what happened with those movies.
I think it almost kind of starts to happen in Terminator 2. I was talking about this with my boyfriend, Zach, who also agrees with us that Terminator 1 is way better than 2. Maybe not way better in your sense, but me and him both think that the first one's way better. But he was saying things like, oh, in 2, they start piling on time travel, mumbo jumbo, and this isn't Doctor Who, this is Terminator, and this is like it's a 2-hour movie. The first one's an hour and a half, the second one's 2.5, and it starts to feel like a bogged down James Cameron plot all of a sudden. And versus the first one where I feel like he edited himself so well.
Well, and he almost had to, because he was restrained by a budget. It was only his second movie. The only movie he did before this was Piranha 2, The Spawning.
That's right.
Yeah. So he's still a relatively new filmmaker at this point with a pretty low budget. And again, I think it serves the movie well, especially like you watch the visuals and you're like, oh, that was made for $6 million. Like that's pretty good. That's a pretty damn good movie to be made on that budget.
No, it's a great movie to be made on that budget.
Yeah, that's true. No, you're absolutely right. And so two, I'm interested to get into the time travel because that's kind of one of those where I do kind of go with it. And to slightly correct you, the first one's like an hour 50 not an hour and a half. It does feel like it flies by fast, but it is still like almost 2 hours.
I think it was an hour 40 actually, because I remember timing it to my bedtime, and I think it was a little bit over an hour and a half. It wasn't quite an hour 50. Especially since the credits are so long, but that awful music.
Oh, no, I'm starting the podcast with that score. Like, it's just going to happen. I know.
Oh, now I have to tell you my story and why. Like, okay, so I was sitting there totally into Terminator, and then I'm like humming the song at the end, and I'm like, why do I know this? Why do I know what note's next? This doesn't make sense. I haven't seen this movie. It's not like I sit here on my computer and listen to the Terminator score when I haven't seen the movie. That song, I realized right after I started humming it, every night I would close concession, box office, or usher at the movie theater I worked at, that song would play because we had a Terminator game in the lobby. And so I would hear that music as I cleaned up. So like in my mind, instead of it being the Terminator theme song, it's the theme song to me hating my life.
Oh, well, that's depressing. I was wondering, okay, so that is unfortunate. But I was also going to say that score, like, kind of along with Star Wars and, like, that score is pretty iconic. Like, even if you haven't seen the movies, it's a pretty recognizable score.
I had no idea. And then it made sense because I was like, the Terminator game, that's where that music came from. Oh, my God. It was like a light bulb.
It gets worse in like the later movies because like every time like a big action heavy moment, like Genesis especially is guilty of this. We'll do the dun 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 dun. And I'm like, don't do it in the movie. It's the damn theme. Like it's you play it at the beginning or the end. But like there were just so many moments where like Arnold would come out and it'd be like dun 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 dun. I was like, this is like self-parody. It's ridiculous. But I'll get into that later. So let's move on to Terminator 2. So let's, I agree. I think Terminator is a much better movie. I think Terminator 2 in terms of like a visual effects movie and in terms of an action movie, I think it's one of the best action movies. Like again, as a whole, the first Terminator is better in its mythology and its sort of like restraint and its power. But the set pieces in Terminator 2 are to me still some of the most memorable sequences ever put to film. And I think that, I feel like so many modern movies can't even hold a candle. Like, especially watching Terminator Genesis, like the special effects in 2 are still better and it's 2015 and that movie was made in 91. And I think that is incredible, but I do want to hear your thoughts on T2 and I guess the reasons why you think it is inferior as I do, but I want to know specifically.
Well, I think it's an overbloated screenplay. And not only is it overbloated, but it's the same screenplay as Terminator, but switch out Sarah Connor for a bitty John Connor who is really, really obnoxious. And then have a cool robot villain instead, and then have a robot protector instead. Like, it basically was the same plot. And
yeah,
I don't know,
I mean,
wasn't really...
It has
I'm
the
watching.
Same idea.
It's the same movie, just with more script to it and a lot more set pieces. And I think some of those set pieces are really brilliant, like the one where they go through the drainage ditch, which I guess is the Los Angeles River. I don't know. And the truck is like chasing after John Connor on his little motorcycle. And then the Terminator comes
one,
and saves him.
The same one Ryan Gosling drives down. I was going to say the same one Ryan Gosling drives down in Drive.
Oh, it is, isn't it? I didn't catch that because I saw Drive in 2007 and I haven't seen it since. But yes, but I really liked that scene. I thought it was really well done and well shot, but then it just felt like they kept repeating these shots over and over again, which is something James Cameron is really, he's really good at. And I don't think this is a fault necessarily for the movie that he mostly focused on special effects and shots. Because I feel like that's what he's good at, like, bringing together. But I feel like what James Cameron's weakness is, and it starts showing in Terminator 2, is that he is really not a very talented writer. And that's why Terminator 2 is just a bloated, regurgitated version of the first film.
Interesting. I still think it's a story that stands on its own, though. Like, I know it's kind of, it's the same template. Two people are sent back, one to kill, one to protect. Like, I get that it is sort of the same story, but again, I feel like the subsequent movies have kind of ruined what was so impactful about too, especially because it comes to a complete end. And I think I appreciate of that he's like, I want to return to this series that I started. Like, I want to return to this movie. And now that I've made Aliens, which is also like a great sequel, or at least on par as Alien. Now I have carte blanche to do what I want, and I want to return to this. And it's maybe indulgent and definitely gets bogged down in his writing. It's interesting you bring up John Cotter being irritating, because like, I don't see that, because I've seen this movie probably upwards of 100 times since I was 12. So I was John Connor's age when I saw this movie. So I don't find him annoying, but like a friend of mine who's like, you know, acknowledges how great the filmmaking is in the movie. He's like, I can't watch two, because he's like, Edward Furlong is just so insufferable in it. I just can't handle it. So I find it interesting that you found it to be the same way in that way. Oh. But,
yeah, I could not stand him. The moment he appeared on screen, I was like, someone needs to slap the shit out of this kid, because he is back-mouthing his foster parents, who are actually pretty nice people. When you put
them, no, they're not. Like, they're not nice people.
Oh, I don't think so. You don't think that they're fine. There's nothing wrong with them. They're not like, they're treating him fairly. They gave him a nice neighborhood. They gave him some food. I mean, they're kind of like, they're not 100% in his life, but they're giving him a nice life. And then he's just a little shit about it. He's stealing money from the bank. Someone needs to punish him. And I don't know. He got on my nerves, like, the whole entire movie. I was like, John Connor, someone just needs, you know, you need to die. Maybe you do need to be terminated.
Yeah, I don't know. Only because, again, that was probably stuff that, I mean, again, when I was 12, I thought that stuff was cool. I thought his, like even his friend says when he's, you know, blasting that Guns N' Roses song over and over again from this boombox, and his friend's like, your foster parents are kind of dicks, huh? And I'm like, yeah, they are kind of dicks. Like, that's the way I saw them. And that doesn't mean that the guy should have got killed through the blade from the from Robert Patrick's Terminator.
That was really awesome.
It's a good scene, but yeah, it doesn't mean that they deserve that. But I definitely thought his foster parents were awful. But yeah, I don't know. And I do like, and we forgot to mention, because like, he is the star of this series. These are Arnold Schwarzenegger's two best performances, both of them, because even though they are the same character, they are two completely different performances. And that's true. I think that's something special on his own, because he's, you know, he has no range. Like, we'll be honest, he doesn't have a range, but he has charisma and he has a screen presence. And so like, that the movies that he's good in have been the ones to be able to capitalize on that. And especially like the first one, because he is such a, you know, he's just such a bulky, muscular person. Like, he could be threatening. And so his presence alone is terrifying. Whereas this one, it's like, it's kind of like warm, and you kind of buy him as a guardian, especially like his deadpan line deliveries, which I think are great, but it's also heartbreaking, I think, especially at the end, that still makes me sad to this day.
This is also a thing I have a problem with. And I feel so shitty, but like, it started when John Connor and the Terminator are having an argument, and he's like, I want to go save my mom. And then he's like, that's not in my programming. And then like 5 minutes later, he's like, I want to go save my mom. And he's like, okay, I do whatever you say. And I'm like, wait a minute, hold on, robot. Well, you're supposed to do everything he says, but you argued with him. At first, you're a robot. You don't argue. You just do what people say, especially if it's in your programming to do specifically what John Connor says.
Well, maybe. But I mean, he could be just advising him that it's like, maybe that's not the direction we need to take. But he insisted on it and said, OK. But it was that. And that's, you know, I didn't get to watch two again before, but I've seen it a million times. Is that before or after or during when he goes to shoot the guys who are giving John crap? And then John says, you know, you can't kill people. He's like, why? I'm a Terminator. And he's like, you just can't kill people. And then has him, you know, shoot him in the kneecaps instead, or whatever happens later. Did this conversation happen after? Oh, that is. Okay. That's what I thought. And so he's like, Yeah, like you said, he's like, why do I need to do that? It's so, like, he's programmed, but he's programmed to do different things. I don't know. It's just roll with it, Jenny. Jeez.
I didn't feel like rolling with it because I was like, but the first one, it's so simple. And now they're making it confusing because a robot has feelings all of a sudden. And I'm like, no, Terminators do not have feelings. I learned that from the first one.
No, then, and he didn't. I still don't think he didn't. He understood what feelings were, but he did not have them.
I bet you get teary-eyed when he's like, I understand why you cry.
But it's something I can never do. Yeah, I do. I do. I firmly hold. And he goes down in the lava and gives him the thumbs up. Yeah, I do.
I order you not to go.
Why you cry, but it's something I can never do.
I feel bad. I snorted. I was like, okay, robot. Okay. Okay, Alicia Vikander.
you watch this movie when you're 12, you know? Well, obviously you can't unless you get a Terminator time machine and can go back, but...
Maybe I have one. Yeah. How do you know?
I don't know. Maybe I am Sarah Connor. Bum, 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 bum.
No.
It's just something that will never escape. It's something that's never going to escape. I'm trying to think what else I wanted to touch on about this movie. It's really hard because there's a lot to touch on. So there's especially the idea that they're essentially destroying the thing that's going to kill them in the future, Skynet. Like they're destroying what is being on like the cusp of the technology of tomorrow. Which I definitely think is interesting, and especially the way they try to play with it, like in later movies, and it doesn't work. I don't know. It just doesn't work in the other movies as well as it does this movie.
No, I can definitely see that because, well, okay, maybe I can talk and you'll figure out why. Well, I think that the introduction of them trying to eliminate Skynet complicates the series as it is. And I feel like that's probably the beginning of the spark that was the downfall for the series of them trying to figure out, we destroyed Skynet, but the future is still inevitable. And I can see that getting really confusing in the future because at the end of Terminator 2, if Terminator 2 ended and there were no Terminator 3s, no Salvations, no Genesis Sices.
No Sega Genesis.
Yeah. how you would think, the Earth doesn't die. They have killed the chip. It's over. But I have a feeling that someone else is going to create that chip somewhere else at the end of that movie. I'm like, it's not over. He gave a thumbs up, but I have a feeling it's not over. You should have kept that Terminator alive. You're going down, John Connor. Someone needs to kill you.
Right. But I guess the thing, too, because you have not seen Terminator 3, and I think that's an interesting point, and I can kind of stem up from yours, is that because I'll have to admit, I did rewatch the first one. I did not rewatch the second one before recording this. But again, I didn't feel I needed to because I've seen two a million times before. But though I probably should have rewatched it. But You've not seen 3, and that's okay. It's not a good movie. It's starting to look better against the 2 that came after it, but it is not a good movie. And so, like, that 3 has ideas in it, and it has that idea that mankind will inevitably find their doom. Like, we'll eventually... we'll find a way to screw it up somehow. So it was just like... In 3, it's the same dynamic. T-100, played by Arnold, comes... or 101, comes back to protect John Connor. One comes back to kill him. And so... And that's the other thing, too, is the other movies keep trying to replicate that formula. Like, you're already accusing 2 of being the same movie as 1, just more bloated and complicated. And that's valid. I think that's a valid point. I don't disagree necessarily with that point, but the filmmaking in 2 is still like very, very strong. Whereas like you have this replicated formula, but without the like convincing filmmaking behind it. And so therefore it starts to get really bogged down. And so 3, especially, it's like, you know, I like the idea that they're like, you know, it's inevitable. We did not destroy Skynet. We just postponed the inevitability. And 3 ends, spoiler alert, but again, you don't need to see it. And it's a 12-year-old movie, so sorry, listeners, but that movie, I have to give that movie credit for its ending, because it ends, the world ends, the John Connor and Brewster, Kate Brewster, I think, or whoever becomes his wife, like they're fated to be, they're in a bunker, and the world ends, and that's how the movie ends. And I'm like, that's incredible, because most movies like this would find a way to stop that from happening. And nope, the world ends. And I'm like, that's pretty ballsy. But also, like, I wish the movie that was in the rest of this was better. So I think that it does certainly complicate things. And that's why I just kind of like to think of 2 as the end, even though mankind will inevitably find their doom. It still just has a perfect arc for the 2 movies, that it's just like, it could end there and it would be okay.
I think that's why I like the first one more too, is because at the end of the first one, the world is still going to end. Like, nothing has changed except Sarah Connor lives to have John Connor to save the world. Mm-hmm. Once the world is in doom already. But I just kind of, I liked how it stuck to its guns and it didn't change the future. It just kept the future going. And I felt like the second one kind of almost ruined that idea of the movie not sticking to its guns. Instead, it like kind of tried to wrap it up in a very pretty bow. It felt like, oh, no, we did save the world. We're good. John right. Connor did it before he did it.
And maybe, again, I think that was Cameron both wanting to return to this world, but also his attempt to shut the door so that, you know, that because he had no desire to make another one. So he was trying to shut the door. I feel like that actually kind of worked, because no one has received the next 3 movies better than the first 2 were received, because they just haven't been able to come up with a convincing story, or at least a good story to warrant returning to. And also evident by the movie's box office receipts. Like, as much as I'm happy we're doing this episode, but we postponed it so much that people have already stopped talking about Terminator Genesis. It's only been out for 2 weeks by the time this episode drops, and people don't care. I mean, I don't think people really cared before, but they're like, oh, whatever, I don't care.
Yeah, and honestly, after 2, like, I think I like the ending. I do like 2. Let me make a point that I did enjoy watching Terminator 2. I did not hate my time watching it. I nitpicked it a little bit more because I liked 1 so much more, but I still liked it. At the same time, I had no interest in going to 3 or 5, especially since I had seen 4, basically forgotten much of 4, and remembered how much I hated watching 4, and how 4 was the reason why I didn't go back to these first 2 movies that are actually good. Mm-hmm. That makes me completely not interested in 3. I'm even less interested in 5 from the promotional material I've seen.
Yeah, and that's understandable. And I can understand if the only movie you saw prior to these 2 was Salvation, that would dissuade you, because that is the worst one by far. Like, it's worse than, like, I thought Genesis was better than it. Salvation is a completely unmemorable movie made by a pretty hacky director in McGee, that totally boggles the sort of like mythology behind the movie, and kind of doesn't try to rewrite it, but it tries to like play by the rules that have already been set, but it doesn't really, there's nothing to add to it. It's just a series of like prolonged action sequences that would not have been out of place in the Transformers movies. Like, especially with like the big giant robots in that movie. I'm just like, this is really dumb. And honestly, really like assaultingly loud. Like that was one of the loudest movies that I've ever seen in my life.
Terminator Salvation. I honestly can't remember. I think I might've fallen asleep or tried to fall asleep during that movie. I might've made out with my boyfriend the whole time. It was when we first started dating.
Did you see it? Fair enough. But just out of curiosity, did you see it in a theater?
Yeah.
How could you have fallen asleep? I don't think there's any possible way that anybody could have fallen asleep because it was that loud.
Okay, maybe not.
I don't think it would be possible. But anyway, like that movie is incredibly unmemorable. And again, like that movie is like, I don't know who that movie was made for, because it kind of tries to get people who haven't seen a Terminator movie up to speed. But if you haven't seen any of the others, you're going to be lost. And if you have seen any of the others, you're going to be pissed because it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. So I'm like, I don't know who that movie was for, to be honest.
It was for Christian Bale? Question mark, maybe.
I guess. Or, you know, or Sam Worthington, I guess.
Oh, was he in that?
Yeah.
Oh, man. See, this is how much I don't remember. I remember Anton Yelchin, though.
Yeah, he was the young Kyle Reese in that. Yeah, yeah.
I guess that is who he is.
Sam Worthington, who went to the same school of charisma-free acting as Jai Courtney, Henry Cavill, and Armie Hammer. Like, I don't know
how. I love Armie Hammer. He was in The Social Network, and he's great.
His only one good role.
Hey, I like The Lone Ranger.
I don't, but I'm just saying that guy has no charisma, and neither of the other actors I just named. And which is funny because Jai Courtney then got the role as Kyle Reese in Terminator Genesis. Now I'm just starting to sound like a nitpicky fanboy, and I hate that because I should be sounding more level-headed. But so you have not seen Terminator Genesis and have no interest in seeing it.
No.
And I have seen it just so I could talk about it on this podcast.
All right.
Witnesses say you were fighting with a man on the bridge.
Agents, listen to me. My name is O'Brien.
No.
Hey, I've been working this case for 33 years.
Sit down!
Hey! Hey!
He's looking right at you.
It's impossible. He can't see you.
Why are they always trying to kill you? I want to help you. I do. I think. But I gotta understand. I know what's going on here. It has to be really, really complicated.
We're here to stop the end of the world.
I can work with that.
I saw it a week ago. This movie, I did not hate this movie. And I was not bored while watching this movie. Like, I was... They try to do... They essentially tried to do what J.J. Abrams did with Star Trek. Not remotely to the successful level that Abrams pulled it off. But they basically veer off into a new timeline and try to acknowledge what came before, but also veer off and do their own thing. But it doesn't really work because like they recreate scenes, like whole scenes from the first one with like a digital... like Arnold body double with the younger Arnold on it. Like even down to the point where like the thugs at the beginning of the first Terminator, like he has that conversation with them and they just recreate that whole scene. But then the old Arnold comes and shoots him. He's like, I've been waiting for you. And it's which you've seen in the trailers because they blew every single surprise this movie had in the marketing. It's really annoying the movie because it tries to explain all the time travel because like you see at the beginning of the movie, they're in the future and they're attacking Skynet. And it's like, it's the last stand. Skynet's about to fall. They defeat it, but their last ditch effort is their time machine. And so they send the T-101 back to 1984. And then the resistance gets a hold of it and they send Kyle Reese back. And then it's like, oh, we've been here before. But then it's like you found out a Terminator was sent back when Sarah Connor was like 9 to protect her. And, but I'm like, how did they send him back? That doesn't make any sense, because if this was your last ditch effort and this is the first person you sent back, how did you send somebody back even further in the past? And it just kind of like, again, it's like fan fiction, the movie. It's like, and I know I said that off mic, but it's like, what if the movie is just a series of like, well, what if we sent someone back in time? What if Sarah Connor was a badass and like immediately in 1984 when Kyle Reese got there? And what if she knew that Kyle Reese was the person who was John Connor's father at that point? Like, it's just it's a series of stuff that doesn't make sense. And I was like, I was fascinated by like how they played with that mythology without enjoying it, if that makes any sense whatsoever. My eyes did not glaze over in the back of my head as much as it did watching Jurassic World. I'll say that. I will give it that. Because at least this movie failed, but tried to do something interesting with its like concept. Whereas Jurassic World was like, well, here's a nugget of an idea and we're not going to do anything with it. Hey, remember how good the original Jurassic Park is? Yeah, we can't make it that good. So here's this dinosaur fight. Enjoy it. And it's like, well, it's boring. So this movie was not boring, but it was incredibly dumb.
I didn't know about the, because I edited Taylor's review for Terminator Genesis, and I remember the convoluted plot that came with it. And I remember, and I actually thought about this when watching the first and the second one, that he said that a Terminator is sent back to protect Sarah Connor at a very young age. And I was like, wait a minute, hold on. No.
Well, the thing is, it's like, just not possible. That's the thing. I was like, you can't do that, because then if you do that, that's why I don't think of this movie, or like, I don't think of 3 and beyond as canon, because it completely undermines what 1 and 2 did, especially Genesis, because it's like, you're going to rewrite the future. Then what's at stake then? If you do that, like, you erase all stakes from the other movies. So it's just like, this movie is, again, not bad in the sense that it was like, you know, straight up terrible, but it was just like, it's an unnecessary movie, and a movie that I don't know why it was made, period. I don't know why it was made with the budget that it had, because nobody cares about the Terminator anymore. Like, nobody wants to see another Terminator movie. I really just don't think that. And honestly, nobody really cares about Arnold Schwarzenegger anymore. It breaks my heart to say that, but it's totally true. Nobody cares. And like, the world has moved on from that, and I, you know, for better or worse. And so I just don't know why they keep making these movies, and they intend this to be a trilogy. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think this movie has been successful enough for them to warrant making another one, and they'll just reboot it in another 10 years. So, oh well.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. Like, and that's what I noticed. And I can't believe someone at, is it Warner Brothers that did
Genesis?
Universal. Yeah.
No, it's Universal. Paramount did it.
Paramount. Okay. Whoa. Okay. Well, I can't believe someone over at Paramount didn't go, hey, Terminator Salvation made not a lot of money. Do we really think that a fifth Terminator movie is going to make any money, even if we stuff the Mother of Dragons in it?
Well, yeah. And I honestly think their only logic was like, well, we got Arnold back. I think that was really their only, like, you know, they're like, well, Salvation didn't do any well. Yeah, but we got Arnold back in this one. And it's like, you know, it's nice.
That's
to
probably
see him.
Exactly how it went down in the room
pitch
wherever
meeting.
They decided
I guarantee
to get the pitch
that's
meeting.
Exactly. I'm guarantee you that's exactly what happened. They're like, well, yeah, Salvation didn't make much money. Like, oh, yeah, but we got Arnold this time. And it's like, but look at Arnold's last few movies in the big, like, nobody cared. Like, The Last Stand, nobody saw it. I mean, I saw it. You saw it, right? Didn't you see it?
No, but it's done by
Kim Ji Woon.
Kim Ji Woon,
right?
Yeah.
I that's why I thought you might have seen it. I wasn't sure.
No, I'm not interested. See, I'm the problem.
You are the problem. I saw it. It was fine. It's like, it was good to see like Arnold in a nice, like, fun role again. It was actually more disappointing that it didn't retain a lot of Kim Ji Woon style. That was more my disappointment in it. So I was torn. But like, and Maggie came out in limited release. Nobody saw it. Expendables 3, nobody saw it, and that was a legitimately terrible movie, so, like, I understand.
Oh, Expendables 3. I had watched it without seeing an Expendables movie. I wish I hadn't watched
it. Yeah, it was a bad movie. It's, yeah.
Oh,
so
bad.
So nobody cares anymore, so it's just like, why don't you just let it be? like, again, I feel, especially after these last two movies, I'm like, man, I did not like three, but I'm almost tempted to rewatch it because I'm like, I remember things from three, and there are interesting things in three, even though it is not good. But it's like these next two were just, you know, well, Salvation was just bad, and then Genesis was like fascinating, but unnecessary. And again, I don't know why it's a friend. And it's PG-13 too. Like, who wants a PG-13 Terminator movie? Nobody.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to agree with you there. I always like, I'm like, well, when you say things like that, but after seeing the first one, I'm like, why would you want a PG-13 Terminator movie? Like, what's the point?
Yeah, I mean,
what's the point? You can't have an awesome scene where he's like in a club and shooting all these people up, and then Sarah Connor's like, "What the fuck did you get in here?" And then Kyle Reese is like, "Come with me if you want to live."
Oh, that's the other bad thing about like the late, like from three and on, is like they have to recycle those lines, or they feel they have to recycle those lines, and I'm like, you can't stand as your own movie if you keep relying on the other ones as a crutch. And that's where Genesis makes a mistake. And like, I don't want to harp on it because I've clearly made my opinions known among those who know me. But like, Jurassic World does the same thing. It just relies so much on the first movie as a crutch that it just doesn't work. It can't be its own thing. And I just think that that's, you know, if you're going to do your own thing, try to distance yourself from the other ones. Don't try and like replicate it, because then you just remind people of what they liked about the first one and to disappoint them as they're sitting in their seat.
How dare you remind me of a better movie?
Exactly. And plus, I mean, it's not really spoilers because it's in the marketing. The whole idea of John Connor being the villain is, I think, a really desperate idea for them to try and like shake things up, because it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And it's just like, again, it's that thing of like, if you play with the you try to erase the timeline so much, it's like, what's at stake? If John Connor's not your savior, what are we really fighting for? Within the context of the movie, I'm just like, well, what are you fighting for at this point? Like, it doesn't, there's no stakes. And then, you know, Terminator Sega Genesis, or the aptly titled Genesis, is basically like an iPad. Essentially, like, they tried to modernize it by just making it some app that's gonna be this revolutionary thing. And I thought that was also just a, you know, kind of a lazy plot thread. But I don't know, should we move on or come up with any other thoughts? I feel like I'm really just ranting about how dumb Terminator Genesis is without any sort of like lack of hyperbole or restraint, so I feel like I should quit.
I didn't actually know that John Connor was the villain in Genesis, because I've literally paid zero attention to the advertising of that movie. And everyone's like, oh, giant spoiler and all this stuff. And I'm like, I don't care enough. Who's this? Maybe it's because I didn't know who was playing who, but, I can definitely see that little shit becoming a villain from Terminator 2.
Well, you're also, I guess, spoiler for anybody who cares. Your boy Matt Smith is the one who turns him into
Skynet. Villain.
Yeah, which he's an embodiment of Skynet, and he's in the movie for like 5 minutes.
Matt Smith is better than that.
He was more interesting in Lost River than he was in this movie. anyway, yeah, Terminator Genesis is a movie. It's like, I don't know. It's a weird movie where it's like, it's just frustratingly mediocre, and I don't know who I'd recommend it to, because I can't recommend it to fans of the series because they'll be annoyed, and I can't recommend to people who haven't seen a Terminator movie because they'll be lost. So it just doesn't, it's a movie without a home and a movie that's just should be forgotten.
Maybe China will love it.
Maybe China will be the reason we get another one. I don't know. But
oh no, it could be. If it does as well as Transformers, we'll get another one.
We will.
Just for China alone.
They spent a lot of marketing money on this movie, though. This movie was everywhere. It's in, like, Red Robin commercials. It's in... Yeah, I could not escape the advertising for this movie. It was sporting events.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're not wrong. That's why I'm really surprised that I didn't know John Connor was the villain, or pretty much anything about Genesis aside from the fact that Danny's in it. Yeah, because I just remember every time I, like, turned around, I felt like there was a Terminator in my face, which is probably why I didn't want to watch the first and the second one, even though I suggested it for this podcast. It was kind of a weird thing.
Well, I'm glad that you did give him a chance, despite the terrible sequels that came after it.
It was hard.
Which funny, because Emilia Clarke isn't even the first Game of Thrones actress to play Sarah Connor.
Oh, right, because oh my god, there's a Terminator TV series, that's right.
The Sarah Connor Chronicles. That Lena Headey played her,
yeah.
And that was a good show, actually. It only lasted 2 seasons, but, like, it was a much better, the show was better than these last 3 movies, I will say that.
Okay, maybe I'll look into it.
It's worth checking out.
I remember that show. Yeah. I think I watched the first episode.
Yeah, I watched the series.
And I was probably really confused.
You were what?
Confused the first episode.
Well, I find it interesting because it takes place between 2 and 3. So it's after the events of 2, which to me, I think it's the real sequel. It's the real, like, epilogue to 2 is the series.
Okay, maybe I'll look into it. Because if it's only 2 seasons, that's pretty easy.
It's worth checking out. I think season 1's only 13 episodes. I think season 2 is a full, like, 22, 24. But that's still pretty doable, and I highly recommend it. So, yeah, if you're going to, you know, continue anything Terminator, watch the Sarah Connor Chronicles. Don't watch Rise of the Machines or Salvation or Genesis.
Blah.
Yeah.
Don't watch Matt Smith waste his time.
Totally.
Go watch him time travel in Doctor Who.
Which I've never seen, but I would probably rather watch that than watch Terminator Genesis.
I would rather watch Doctor Who than a lot of things. Don't make it sound so condescending.
Oh, I've just never watched it. That's my only thing.
All right.
Oh, anything else before we wrap this up?
No. In the end, I do think Terminator 1 is better than 2, but 2 is not bad. And I was really surprised. I usually think these macho 80s movies are macho and boring, to say the least. Like I said, I didn't like Blade Runner that much, and I can't think of anything else that I've, like, mentioned before to somebody, and they've been like, oh my god, you don't like that movie? But I was really surprised, and even as someone who is not an 80s lover, I thought it was really, 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 really good.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just it's the first two. I mean, they're seminal films whose influence has spread, like, all over filmmaking. Like, I think so many films have drawn inspiration from these movies, to the point where it's just like they're movies that just have their place in pop culture, and deservedly so. Well, it would seem our connection had dropped right before wrapping up this episode, but we were ready to wrap anyway, so that concludes our third episode of Unspooled Reel. You can listen to this podcast and all of our news, reviews, previews, trailers, Netflix, anything you can think of at gotchamovies.com. You can like us on Facebook as well as follow us on Twitter at gotchamovies. This podcast is also on iTunes, so be sure to subscribe to us there. Leave a comment or rating if you're so inclined. It helps us know what we're doing right and what we can improve on. If you like this podcast, you can also listen to the other podcast that I co-host, Over Under Movies, with Octay Agay-Kozak and Eric McClanahan of The Playlist, where we pick one overrated movie and one underrated movie and discuss them. So this concludes our third episode, and when we return for our fourth, we'll be discussing a couple movies available on VOD, the Mark Duplass joint Creep, and the horror movie We Are Still Here.